This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk. This is our 34th week of Salesport Talk. If you recall, on our fourth show, Tom Slingsby came to our broadcast studios at Sports Byline in San Francisco and signed the studio's celebrity wall just before he competed in the SailGP San Francisco race. Now, 7 months later, Tom Slingsby and Team Australia are now champions of SailGP after a very exciting first season. SailGP has now unveiled an exciting new program for young sailors that Sir Russell Coutts hinted at last May when I talked with him. It is called Inspire Racing, and it will use flying dinghies at SailGP events to help bridge the gap between youth sailing programs and professional pathways. In Australia, Slingsby started hosting an on-water coaching session at Gosford Sailing Club with aspiring young local sailors on foiling dinghies. This new program is geared towards young competitive sailors with an interest in learning how to foil. Applications for the first two SailGP Inspire Racing events in Sydney and San Francisco are now open for sailors age 20 or under. Those chosen will be invited to a high-performance camp with access to expertise from coaches and SailGP team members to prepare them for the chance to race on the same waters as the SailGP's F50s in front of cheering crowds. Another new program, called SailGP Inspire, will work with local partners to select 16 sailors aged 15 or under to take part in the program. It is designed to engage students with little or no knowledge of sailing. So all of you who want to be sailing athletes, this sounds like a great way to begin. For details on how to apply for any of the SailGP Inspire programs, visit sailgp.com/inspire. In Seattle, Washington, the National Sailing Hall of Fame celebrated its ninth class of inductees at the Seattle Yacht Club's main station. This 126-year-old club is on the National Register of Historic Places and located on Portage Bay. On hand to welcome the class of 2019 into their ranks were prior inductees Gary Jobson, Bob Johnstone, and Tom Whitten. Inducted to the National Sailing Hall of Fame as members of the class of 2019 is a passionate sailor whose leadership in establishing safety protocols has had a global impact on offshore sailing, Captain John Bonds. Founder in 1906 of the Newport Bermuda race, Thomas F. Day. Sailmaker, Robbie Doyle. Olympic gold medalist, Buddy Fredericks. The sport's first ever woman Olympic gold medalist, Allison Jolly. A clipper ship builder, Donald McKay. The grandfather of fiberglass production, Everett A. Pearson. Pioneering yacht designer, Doug Peterson. Magazine editor and publisher, Herbert Lawrence Stone. And one additional inductee, author and world champion sailor Arthur Knapp Jr., is being recognized with the NSHOF Lifetime Achievement Award.
All right, thank you so much. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you in San Francisco, coast to coast, around the world on the American Forces Radio Network, 177 countries, 940 on a Tuesday. Karen Lyle is with us with Sailsport Talk. Karen, how are you?
I am doing fantastic.
You're wearing a festive scarf from your time in London?
I am. This is from the In-N-Out Naval and Military Club in London.
Good hamburgers there.
You know, they actually do have hamburgers in the club. It's amazing. But they're a little more expensive than the street kind.
Yes. They don't really get it just right there. There's something a little off. That's why they say your burgers are gorgeous when they come here.
Right.
Let's go to our guest. Mark Pearson is with us, and he's here on behalf of his father, Everett Pearson, who is a inductee posthumously into the American Sailboat Hall of Fame up in Seattle, Washington. Mark, welcome to the show. And it's interesting to hear about how your dad in the 50s was inventing new ways to use fiberglass. And when I think the 50s, I think of people going around in their Chris Crafts, not using fiberglass. How groundbreaking was that?
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me. Well, it was pretty interesting because he used to say back at the New York boat show that the wooden boat builders were all getting mad at him and looking at him and saying, why are you building with this material that doesn't going to last? And it ended up lasting, and he and his cousin Clint started Pearson, and they started a tradition that started in the boats that lasted for quite a long time.
Well, and not only lasted, but became a hallmark in racing, and your dad was really into racing. He not only built boats, but he has how many trophies did he earn and what do you do with all of those now?
Well, he earned quite a few. He and Mom actually spent quite a bit of time racing S boats and Pearsons and some of the custom boats that he sailed. He sailed the Bermuda and did SORC and a lot of the races. But his passion was boat building. It was building the boats that people enjoyed every day, as you said, the Pearsons and J boats and Freedoms and Aldens and all of the boats that he built is what really made him, drove him.
I saw that your father was born in 1933, and that's the same year my dad was born. And so I think about growing up with a guy from that time. I know your dad went to Brown; he was a football player. But this is something that he started with his cousin in a garage, right? It's not like they were bequeathed some sort of fortune.
No, exactly. They got a mold. Actually, a gentleman that was a friend of the family's bought them the first material that they used. And they made a mold for a dinghy, and they built one and put it out on the side of the road. And one of the neighbors drove by and said, is it for sale? And they said, yeah. And they sold it. So then they built another one and put it out there, and another one and another one. And basically that's how it started. And then they moved. That was up in Seekonk, Massachusetts, and then they moved it to Bristol.
Well, you know, the first boat that I ever had was a Choi Lee that was the old fiberglass where you had to hand lay everything. And I guess your dad created this injection process that made it so that he could build six boats in a day. Is that the hull that they were manufacturing in that quantity?
Well, back when we were building the J-24, the six a day, that we were still doing hand layup at that time. And we then took it to a system that was called scrimp, which Bill Siemens out of Gulfport, Mississippi, was the one who invented it. And then Everett went down and met in with him and bought into the process and took it from small panels to large vessels. The first boat we built was a 64-foot Sundeer with it. But that revolutionized the business because at the time we were on the state's top 10 list. Unfortunately, it wasn't best companies, it was emissions. And by going to the scrimp process, we were able to, and building underneath the vacuum, we were able to reduce our emissions greatly and came off of that top 10 list. But it allowed us to build a laminate that was 70% glass, 30% resin, and gave us the strength to be able to, instead of building hand layup and thick laminates, to go down to thin laminate. So with Bill Siemens' help and Everett and everybody in the shop, we were able to revolutionize boat building.
You know, another business I have is piano rebuilding, and they had like a vacuum process for making plates for the pianos versus the old cast iron thing. And there was a difference in sound, but here you have a difference in speed because there's less resin. Is that right? And so the boats can go faster.
Well, we're able to build with thinner laminates. You can take so the weight of the boat comes down. Thinner laminates, we rely on the glass to carry the strength of it. You're able to use different types of materials that you wouldn't have been able to do in a hand layup. You can use actually thicker materials where you wouldn't have been able to hand layup the resin through those materials. But with the vacuum infusion process, it allows you to do multiple layers in many different areas, and it infuses it seamlessly.
Speaking with Mark Pearson here on Sports Byline, Mark, in the sailing industry himself, we're talking about his dad, Everett Pearson, who's been inducted into the American Sailboat Hall of Fame. You know, I think about that movie, All Is Lost, with Robert Redford, and when he collides with an object in the ocean, he goes out and he sort of tries to, looks like, you know, takes a piece of fiberglass and, like, glue it on. Is that, where does that fit in with reality?
Depending on how bad the crash is. I don't have a good answer for that one.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of yacht clubs, the Seattle Yacht Club is the one that hosts this National Sailing Hall of Fame ceremony. And I guess you went there and represented your dad for receiving the award since he was not able to receive it himself. And he wasn't a man who really liked a lot of recognition, but I was really interested in something you said about how he built a boat for the handicapped and thought that they had deserved the right to be hurt just like anyone else. Can you tell us a little bit about the Freedom Independence and what what that little story is?
Sure. Our mother, Ginny Pearson, went out with us. Suzanne and Sandra, my sisters, were with us at the induction. And at the end, I told a story about one day a gentleman came into Dad's office on a pair of crutches and sat down and said he had a dream to get handicapped people out on the water. So he and Dad talked about it. And after their meeting, they decided, Dad said, I'll build the boat for you. He said, but, you know, you need to go out and build the organization. And so they agreed upon that. Well, the gentleman that was sitting in the chair was a handicapped person by the name of Harry Horgan. The organization that Harry started is called Shake a Leg. And the boat that they built was the Freedom Independence. Soon after they decided to build it, they were having a design meeting where Gary Mull, Gary Hoyt, and others were at the meeting. But before the meeting, Dad went up to Harry and said, Harry, the lawyers have spoken to us, and they don't feel that we should build this boat. That because it's for the handicap, it's going to be too dangerous, there's too much risk, and there's too much liability in it, so that we really shouldn't do this. So Harry stood there stunned and said, oh, what did you say? And he said, well, I thought about it at first. And then he said, I told him that he said, I feel that even the handicapped should have a chance to get hurt. And Harry said, well, what are we going to do? And he said, well, we're going to build the boat. So they built the boat. And after the first regatta, Dad was at the after party, and everyone was celebrating. And a gentleman came up on his wheelchair, and he just said, I want to say thank you. And Dad looked at him and said, how come? And he said, well, he said, I was a collegiate football player. And he said, you know the adrenaline rush you get when you're on a kickoff or a play happens? He said, after my injury, I lost that. And I thought that I would never, ever regain that. He said, but I just want to say thank you because you gave that back to me today. And Dad loves the Freedom Independence and the program and working with Harry. And we at the shop, we put together a great boat that allowed handicapped people to get out on the water, quadriplegics, paraplegics, other types of handicaps, blind, and they were able to get out on the water and sail. And we made a special chair that when the boat tacked, it was counterbalanced and it would swing to the windward side. So the person that was on the boat was always off the leeward side, was up to windward. And we actually even took the boat out and tried to sink it prior to get it going. We took it out and tried to flip it over, and we couldn't flip it over. We brought it back in, and we filled it with water all the way right up to the gunwales, took it back out, got it to go somewhat over, and I went out on the end of the mast, and we held it there, and it would not go over, would not turn turtle, and the chairs always remained out of the water. So it was kind of a fun project to work on, and Harry has done a wonderful job. He's down in Miami now with Shake a Leg and the Miami Project, and they are helping all kinds of kids and adults get out on the water.
The unsinkable Molly Brown, you could have called that boat. You know, the other thing I think is cool about your father is that, you know, the J-24, you didn't need to be a Rockefeller to buy that boat. And I know, I think it was in the Clinton administration, we started getting luxury taxes. It was hard to build a boat when someone's like, look, I got to pay 10%. I'm out. You know, I've lost interest in sailboats. How hard was it then?
Oh, it was unbelievable. There was a stat that I can't remember the exact stat, but anything over 40 foot, we were building hundreds of boat a year. And all of a sudden, when that luxury tax came in, the sales went down. We went from 300 and some people down to about 125 because no one was buying boats. Alden Yachts at the time was building boats to $500,000 to $1 million, and nobody was buying them. So we worked with J Boats and the Johnstones and came up with a J-105. They came up with a J-105, and we were able to build it for under that $100,000 mark, and it revolutionized it. But that luxury tax, everybody just went to buying used boats or went overseas and did not buy in the American market.
Wow. I have to just pause for that because I do feel for that change that you went through. But look at the innovation that came out of that. You also have some innovation that you've inherited from your father or just developed on your own, something to do with fiberglass pilings, or can you tell us a little bit about that and sustainability?
Sure. Yeah, well, you know, while he was, one of the things to look at is that while Everett was building boats in Warren, and we were building all different models, Freedoms and J boats and Alarians and others. We had a whole industrial side that was going at the same time. Prior to 1995, we were the largest wind blade manufacturer in the world. Mm. And unfortunately, the company that we were building for at that time ran into some problems and went away. So we had to try and come up with something else with all these people that we had working for us. And we said in that area, and we said, why don't we go into utility poles and start building poles, because we used to make the freestanding mast for the Freedom. So we knew how to build a tapered pole. And so we started building utility poles that were 60, 70, 80 feet long. And at the same time, we decided, what about making fiberglass pilings? We built our first fiberglass pilings back in 1996. And then installed them in actually 1997. We took a hiatus for a little while. And when I got out of the boat business in 2005, Dad and I decided to start a company called Pearson Pilings that manufactures just fiberglass pilings. So we started again manufacturing fiberglass pilings, and I continue manufacturing in Somerset, Massachusetts. But they compete against wood and concrete and steel. They don't rust, they don't rot, and they're going to last. They do cost more than wood, but you're buying something that's going to give you a return on your investment. You're buying something that gives you value for your property. And so we build pilings, sell them all around the country, down south, South America. We've sent them to Senegal. We put them in containers, flatbeds, and they're used in marinas, home docks, home foundations. Wherever you may have a need, we can replace steel, concrete, or wood.
There he is, Mark Pearson, the father of Everett Pearson, the Hall of Famer, the father of fiberglass boats. Mark, thanks for your time, man. We really appreciate it, and let's catch up down the road.
Thank you very much for having me.
Good to talk to you.
Karen, as always, thank you for your time. We'll see you next week.
Okay, we'll do it.
9:37. All righty, then.
Tuesday
Come on
morning.
Back.